you either run with technology or get run over by the technology. If you're building a company to fix today's problem, the consumer is the heartbeat of anything you're doing. You're not going to deposit your realtors in the bank. You need more transactions. If I do not have the customer, there's no trips to the bank.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman, with Intellectual Strategies, a law firm that works with a bunch of successful CEOs. And we can't share their stories because they're confidential. So we bring on guests like Sheldon Wolf, who's here with me today. Sheldon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Yeah, really glad to have you. I love talking with people like you who can kind of open the curtain, so to speak, right? Show what's happening behind the scenes in businesses as they're growing, as they're being founded, as they're scaling. Like at each stage, they each have their own chaos, right? And we've talked a little bit about chaos already prior to hitting record here. But I love being able to talk with people like you about what you've seen so we can share that with the people in our audience who are also going through similar paths, right? Some of them have been maybe down the road a little bit further, but haven't seen some of the things you've seen, or some of them haven't been anywhere near as far down the road as you've been, and they get to learn from your insights. So it's really a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, this would be fun.
Yeah, be good. So I want to start off, though, because you have a lot of, I mean, you have over three decades of experience, and want to give everyone a flavor for kind of who you are and what you've done just generally over the last 30, 35 years.
Well, I started off as literally a kid in the business world. I wasn't even 20 yet. I got into real estate, and of course, I wanted to develop. I didn't get in it like a lot of people, where they just saw their friend get into the business and thought, yeah, they could make a lot of money. I got into the business because I genuinely thought I could perform at, you know, big levels. So, of course, I was very, very successful. By the time I was in my mid-20s, I was already on the millionaire route and whatnot. Then I started acquiring a lot of properties. Then we started getting into the land development and the new home industry and tying up projects. And then we got into a point where it was turning over buildings and converting. We slowly slid into this investment mode. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, you become the guy that they call when things are bad. Because if you can imagine, since 1989 to today, how many ups and downs you see. You see, I was talking to a guy. He's saying, oh, yeah, I got into real estate, but it was right after 2008, after the market went crappy and this happened and that happened. And all that goes through my mind is those are some of my best times. If you people ever say, tell me some war stories about the downs of the business. We always know the ups because, yeah, let's face it, even a turkey can fly in a cyclone. What happens when it's bad? What do you do? Well, actually, those are my best times. And the reason is because there's good strategy. And it's always been about, how do you acquisition the customer? There's no bad times if you have nothing but back-to-back customers and your book solid every single day, 3 months in advance. There's no bad. Doesn't matter about the economy. You're going to flourish. So it was always about the customer. How do we acquisition more? How do you differentiate yourself from everyone else there who is struggling, who hasn't figured out how to get the customer and how to gain their confidence? Whether it's confidence in you, whether it's confidence in the market, you know. And that's always been my strong point. I've always been able to evade the downtime, so to speak.
Yeah,
and build the business that way.
Well, I've got family in real estate, so I've seen very, very intimately what some of those downtimes are, and some of the flourishing times. So it's a very interesting business to be in. I'm not in that business, maybe for a reason. I have a few investments, but not in it day to day. Is there a thread that, because people have been in real estate, you've seen so many things. I mean, you've been the deal makers, you've been the buyer, you've been the seller, you've been the repairman, probably the manager. You've probably been all of the roles throughout your career. Is there some type of thread or through line that you would carry from, you know, those days in 1989 when you were just getting started, from there to the flourishing times, to the difficult times, to today? What kind of thread ties all of that together for you?
Well, one thing about me is I come from the industry that, and I don't want to say it hates technology, but I've remembered the changes, the evolution of technology. And this is to real estate. This is to the mortgage industry. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about fintech and we talk about prop tech and the evolution of all the changes that have transpired since, let's say, 1990 to here we are today, I've never been intimidated by it. And I always tell people in the industry, you either run with technology or get run over by the technology. Yeah. So if you see the connectivity where I've changed over the years and where I've grown, and it's always been tied to better technology. If everyone else is still using a fax machine, then obviously, you know, the world has to progress. But going back to 1989, I remember sitting down with customers at their kitchen table with catalogs.
Yeah.
Catalogs with houses. There was no internet where you log on to the MLS and you're looking at homes. And that speaks to the acquisition of customers. Once upon a time, the realtor was in charge. The realtor was the one who had the intel, the information, and the customer relied on the realtor almost 100% for everything. Now, with technology, if you go fast forward, the customer's almost in their own world where if they have a smartphone in their hand, they could do almost everything themselves.
Yeah.
Hence what I built with IntelliTerry. But the one thing to answer your question, I've always grown with technology, but it wasn't just a matter of growing with the technology. I always wanted to be the best technology. I want to figure out how it ticks and how to make it tick louder. But that goes back to 1989, where I said, okay, who's the top guy in this office? Who's the top guy in the industry? Mm-hmm. What are they doing? How do I do it better? But you put the same thing to technology and you say, okay, fine, we're in an AI generation now. How do I make AI do, never mind what I would personally do myself, which is thousands of transactions over the years. How do I do that? Multiply that times 20,000 and come up with a really big number, literally where you can actually control a market. Hmm. And that's what I built with IntelliTerry. But it's, once again, it's my ability to take and harness technology and make it my best friend.
Yeah. And I want to get into what IntelliTerry is and does and how you built it and what kind of things you've run into as you've been building it. Before we get there, though, as you mentioned technology and adopting it, I mean, I'm sure some of our people are saying, 1989, I don't remember that very well because I wasn't here or I wasn't in the real estate. Like, what kind of milestones, technological milestones, are we talking about from 1989 till you started building this this new company?
Well, here's a great story. This one comes right out of the library. I remember having a cell phone, and I remember having a fax machine, and I remember we had to move out some mortgages, and the banks that I dealt with did not even have fax machines yet. The banks didn't yet had to actually have them either courier there as actual paper documents. Mm-hmm. But I remember having it and just shake my head. It's like, how is it that I have a fax machine? And that was the technology du jour, of course. But a bank, a national bank with billions of dollars, doesn't have fax machines at their branches. Like, what?
Yeah.
But I remember the evolution went from there. And then the next milestone was, okay, no realtors even had cell phones at the time. They had these little beepers, but they weren't even alphanumerical. It was just a beep. They would call the office and get their message. But that was the evolution. And then it got to the point where, you know, everyone had a cell phone, but they weren't very smart back then, but everyone had a cell phone. But you got a lot of, back then, you got a lot of, hey, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you hear me? But the evolution is funny because look at real estate. If I had to put one word to what real estate is, it's a communications business. It's customers dealing with a realtor who has to deal with customers on the other side of the transaction who have to deal with their realtor. But it's this big conduit of people needing to communicate. So what I think is the most valuable thing is the ability to communicate. But what's even scarier is the fact that a lot of people, as the time went forward, fought this technology. And something as simple, another story. If I'm boring you with this, you just say, okay, enough of those stories.
I did space out for a minute, though, because I was picturing, like, I had totally forgotten about pagers. Like, but oh, yeah. I think it was probably around the early 2000s. I bought my first home in 2000, and I'm pretty sure our realtor around that time carried a pager with them. And they were the it was like, what was it? Realtors and doctors had pagers. Is that?
Yeah.
That was pretty much it, I think. So anyway, you caught me in a time warp there. I'm like, wow, that's something I hadn't even thought of. So
just a quick note about our guests. I host the Breakout CEO podcast to share behind the scenes insights from scaling businesses. As an attorney, I see the real challenges leaders face long before success becomes public. But client stories have to stay confidential. So we invite guest CEOs to share their own moments of struggle and success. I'm so grateful to our guests and my team at Intellectual Strategies for making this show possible. Now, let's get back to the show.
Well, it's funny how fast things change, but to give you an idea how the industry fights change, once upon a time, there was a lockbox. So if a house was vacant, you'd have a lockbox. You'd have every realtor would have a key, and it would fit magically the lockbox. You get the key, show the property, and that's kind of how that worked. But I remember they were switching over to this electric system where they all had to have this card and you had to enter a code, and realtors hated it and they fought it. And then they of course changed it to a different set. You know, the technology changed, got better, but each time they would change it, realtors would just cuss and swear all this crappy stuff and oh this and that, and they complain. And then of course as the technology changed for the systems where you would put your normally used to send off your listings and your transactions to the brokerage and to the MLS board and whatnot. And now there was new systems that you had to actually log into the computer. And keep in mind that not everybody was computer literate.
Yeah.
But now you have to upload them. You have to actually do all this work and fill in the fields and whatnot. And, oh, they hated it. So every time something changes, and even to this day I know people in the business, but they've just gotten older and older in the business. But every time they're forced to change, they cackle and scream. And it's funny because this time with AI, it's not going backwards. Mm. And even if they hate AI, you don't have to love it, but it's here to stay. And it's just going to get more and more crazy what it's going to be able to do, its abilities.
Yeah.
And that's what's interesting, because it's kind of you can have a love hate with it, and that's okay. But you have to respect it, know that it's not going anywhere. So you got to run with it or get run over by it.
Yeah, no, I think we're seeing that in every industry. I mean, the legal industry that I'm in is notoriously conventional, we'll say, right? Adopting technology, you know, it's things as simple as electronic signatures. People are debating whether or not they'd be valid in you know, state courts versus federal courts for the longest time. And we're seeing that legal tech, or whatever you want to call it now, right? Yeah. A lot of AI adopted technologies in legal. They're being, it's one of the hottest industries to invest in right now in the VC world.
For sure.
I don't know if it's going to last or not. We'll see how it plays out, but it's certainly used to be 4 years ago, legal tech meant nothing. And now it's like, hey, everybody, in fact, that's what Anthropic's like, hey, we released our legal package for, you know, NDAs or contract reviews or whatever it is. And they're just jumping on it from the get go. So I totally understand what you're saying. With that said, I'm intrigued because you mentioned before that real estate is really a communications industry. And I would think that some people looking maybe from the outside, and maybe some people on the inside would say, I don't know, it was really, really an information business. Like if you had the right information and you controlled that information, then you know, you were the king in that community. Do you think that your view of the real estate industry as a communications business instead of an information business has made a difference for you?
So I built Intellitary around two things, which ironically enough is communication, but it is information because it is a conduit for customers. It is meant to obtain customers, screen the customer, qualify the customer, match them, and dispatch them with our subscribed agents. But it's all based on information because really at the end of the day, the customer either A, wants to buy, B, sell, C, buy and sell. They've either been approved, haven't been approved, need to be approved for financing. And then so it goes on the pathway. My My theology is that the winners of the future of real estate will be those that can control the pathway, control the customer journey to get them to the finish line. And the finish line is obvious. They finish a transaction. They either buy something, sell something, or both, mm-hmm. Obtain their mortgage, whatever that finish line is. And maybe at the end of the transaction, it's an insurance policy on their new home and title services and all the other different monetizations I've added to the pathway of what it is we're transacting on. So at the end of the day, the customer belongs to the person, which is really the monetization layer, the orchestration layer I built, but it's all about controlling that customer from beginning to end and turning it into a transaction. And that part's easy to digitalize. And then the real question is, where it leads to usually is AI trustworthy enough in the consumer's mind today versus a real person? And keep in mind, I didn't build IntelliTerry. My goal is not to eliminate realtors or brokerages. It's actually the opposite. It's to preserve the industry, because if I don't build a conduit like this, I mean, theoretically, it can be built to be autonomous. It can be built. I mean, the customer today, sure. Like I said, I used to sit down at their kitchen table with those big fat catalogs and say, hey, here's the houses. You know, today, long before you're even at their kitchen table, they've already been on the MLS, on their smartphone. They've already researched what schools, what the crime rate is. Don't buy in this area, buy in this area. They've already done that before you're even at their kitchen table, if you ever even get to the kitchen table, because most of the time they're what I call transact ready. They've already decided what they want. Yeah. They've already picked out the homes to see. So
when you started to build IntelliTerry, right before you built IntelliTerry, What had you accomplished so far? Because I always find it interesting that people who've done well for themselves, but have that kind of builder, that entrepreneur mentality, even on top of having found success in prior businesses, there's still that drive to say, I think there's something else I could build now. Like, I think there's another opportunity in front of me. Like, what was that moment like for you? Where were you at, and why did you decide to, you know, pull the trigger on one more project, one more business?
Oh, I see things, like I said, that most people completely don't see. I built this superpower to see invisible things.
Okay.
And that's the reason people would pay me to come in and fix their messes and their companies. But when it came to real estate, the whole AI coming in, you know, the theory is, oh, AI is going to take our jobs. Well, the truth is AI in the future will actually get you your job. AI will create new jobs. AI will actually have more to do with bringing jobs. But when it came to real estate, as I said, the customer is able to do so much of their own work. In fact, theoretically today, with the technology we have today, the customer can do their own purchase agreements.
Yeah.
You're talking about the law add-ons for Anthropic and all these other. Well, the fact is, what is a purchase contract is what you have to ask yourself. A purchase contract is nothing more than a whole bunch of fields that need to be mapped out. So your purchase price goes here, the customer's info goes there, the homeowner's info there, but really everything else is just a bunch of conditions which you can point and click. So theoretically, it's not impossible to say in the future, can our real estate program be autonomous? Yes. Now, you say, what makes you tick, Sheldon? What makes you want to build this machine, and why are you doing it? Well, I believe that what's happened in the industry is kind of something like the Flintstones meets the Jetsons. So this is the stuff that most people don't know about the real estate industry, but I've spent almost a good lifetime in that business. So you have all these legacy brokers, these brokerages that are literally still running archaic systems. And they're slowly but surely being acquisitioned by these new cloud brokerages. So you have these old school brokers that used to make a lot of money a long time ago. I mean, these companies go back to the 80s. They were around when I started in the business.
Yeah.
And then you have these cloud brokerages, which are all tech-based. You don't have that kind of warm, fuzzy thing. It's all about, we're going to charge you nickels and dimes to hand in your transaction, you know, a couple hundred bucks. But they built these business models that fiscally don't necessarily work. They're not performing well. The realtors are making more money, but the brokerages are kind of taking it on the chin.
Okay.
So I built Intellitary as a business model to actually enhance the brokerage while also allowing the individual agents to thrive. But most importantly, the customer is the real winner as well, because I've, how you say, I fixed what I call a fragmented industry. Hmm. The industry is just so many mixed parts and nuts and bolts, the evolution of what used to be versus what is today. But a lot of companies I see have actually built their technology to fix today's problem. I'm going to put my investor's hat on for 1 second,
yeah,
because that's a big part of what I do. If you're building a company to fix today's problem, that is your first problem, because today's problems are already fixed by 5 p.m. By tomorrow, they're copied 1,000 times. And by 7 days later, it's obsolete, especially if you're talking about AI. I see so many tools and I see so many new AI products, and everybody's an AI expert, except for one thing that I see that most people, once again, don't see, is that invisible big giant wall that they're all going to hit.
What is that? What is that wall? What do you mean?
It's do you remember the, do you remember that big bubble, every company, every tech company was all there. It was just massive money going into these companies, these tech based companies, and they just melted out.
Which bubble? The early internet bubble, the recent SaaS bubble, every industry.
There's always a bubble.
Yeah.
But the same lesson is everybody's just riding the one horse.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not thinking that there is going to be a bubble. I've already contemplated for that. And the reason is like I said, they're trying to solve today's problem. What I do is I solve invisible problems. So you say, well, what is an invisible problem? Explain what that would be.
Mm-hmm.
Something like consumer behavior. That's a problem. I had a company that I was working with, a bunch of furniture guys. It was a big, big company designed to be an e-commerce beast. And we went to all the furniture shows, and everyone was complaining, big, massive furniture companies. We're all sitting around talking, oh, how do we get the millennial buyer? How do we get these guys to spend money? It's not like it used to be, and blah, blah, blah. But they're all fighting, trying to figure out how to get into the head of the consumer. And they're all chasing the same customer. And all that went through my mind is these guys are really stuck. They're stuck in the sand. They can't figure it out, all because they haven't gotten into the psychology of it. They're too busy just trying to figure out how to get this guy to open his wallet. But as I said, the future of real estate belongs to the person who can harness and create monetization layers as this customer moves through the process. Like, why, if we're in the industry, are we not smart enough to know that, well, everyone who's buying a house, well, maybe not everyone, but let's just say 99%, maybe more, also need a mortgage. Mm-hmm. And when they move in their house, they're also going to need insurance, and they're also going to need title services, and they're also going to need movers, all these other things. So when you design an ecosystem, like I would say, if anything, we're an orchestration layer is what I designed.
Okay.
Multi-tiered orchestration level to deal with the one common thing. And the one common thing is the consumer. But if you don't recognize that the customer's behavior has changed today versus it was 10 years ago, even 5 years for that matter, but why stop it today? Say, well, if the customer's shopping this way today, it's easy to project and say, well, what's he going to be like in 10 years from now? After all these other tools that realtors don't need more tools. Brokerages don't need more tools. They need more customers. And while they're busy trying to come up with a new tool and a new way to talk to a they need more customers. That's where the money, when you go to the bank, you're depositing checks. You can't deposit more agents. You can't deposit more. Like, there are all these things. There was a thing for a while where everyone was trying to get more likes on Facebook. Well, yeah. You can't deposit those likes into the bank. Whenever I try to deposit them, the bank looks at me and says, nope. It's all about monetization and getting the customer past the finish line. That's where the monetization begins. And that's essentially how it's been built. Backwards, as an investor with my investor hat on, mm-hmm. to work top down from the monetization level and deliver that monetization back into the brokerages. And that's what we built.
Okay. Well, and I think you've mentioned elsewhere kind of a distinction between the how and the why, right? A lot of these companies are stuck on how do we get those customers to buy from us, as opposed to not why would they buy from us, but why do those customers behave the way they behave? It's a customer-centric view versus a vendor-centric view, if you will, right? Am I getting that contrast correct with the way that you've talked about it?
Your nail has been hit exactly on the head. It's 110% customer-centric. If there is no customer, there is no realtor, there is no brokerage, there's no mortgage broker, none of that exists. It is the customer and how to set up a path that customer wants to be on. The why is almost everything. How? Well, there's always a way. But the why, and that's what you have to address. And the why plays into their behavior and their psychology. If I told you a story 20 years ago and said, there's going to be a point where a customer is going to press a button on their smartphone, order a box of toothpaste, and by the time they finish pressing, they're taking their hand off their phone, they're going to be running through their front door swearing, where's that toothpaste I ordered 3 seconds ago? That is the behavior we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Today's consumer is very demanding. And at the same time, they're more sophisticated, not because they got smarter, but what's in their hand allows them to be more. So I call it artificial intelligence, and there's artificial sophistication. It's not that they really are sophisticated, more sophisticated, but they have the ability to information a lot faster. And sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong. I mean, I have stupid contests that I have with AI. I challenge it in a lot of cases to see, okay, who's smarter? I'm going to do this, do that, and I'm going to come up with the real answer and see what it comes up. But, you know, it's stuff you do when you have no life like me. But, but the fact is, the consumer is the heartbeat of anything you're doing. No matter who it is, no matter what it is, whether it's real estate or not, whether it's going back to my furniture days, whether it's going back to my Mattress Omni days or my credit programs that I ran. So it's always the same. If I do not have the customer, there's no trips to the bank. End of story. And it's a business that's an automatic fail. Now you have a system where you control the customer. Now all you got to do is figure out, okay, how am I monetizing this? Which there's no large real estate companies that don't have customers. They do. But if they're failing to monetize, that's usually when I get the phone call saying, okay, we're struggling here. We're doing 50,000 transactions, but we're losing money at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I see that. I see that all the time. And I just think, this new generation, these new brokerages, they're trying to lure more agents in. And their way of doing that is they know that these agents used to be at places where it was a 70-30 split. So they're saying, hey, come over here for $275 a deal. You know, your overhead's almost nothing, which is great. And it's great you're getting a high body count and you're reeling in a lot of agents. But look at your financials. And there's one company, and I will never mention these, but they lost $1.25 billion in the last quarter of 2025. It's another real estate company, and they just got acquisition. Actually, there's two companies that have been acquisitioned over the last 12 months. And the one was on NASDAQ, and they couldn't get above the $1 mark. Hmm. Till someone finally bought them, but now they've been bought now, and now they're back under a dollar. And the real reason is you can't excite an investor if you're not making money. What excites an investor? A company making money, that's what excites them. And I just think that their problem is so easy to fix, but what does it come down to? Well, more transactions, more realtors. You're not going to deposit your realtors in the bank. You need more transactions. And that's kind of our thesis, and that's how we built it. That's why we're not a brokerage. We decide we just want to be in the customer side of things. We just want to build customers and transactions and hand them to our brokerages.
I want to get into that here, but I have one more question because I'm super intrigued by what you've been mentioning. What is it, do you think, that allows you to see from the customer perspective more than a lot of these other companies? Because some of these huge companies, I mean, real estate has been they're marketing behemoths, right? They're they're kind of, from my perspective, on par with some of these huge personal injury law firms that are starting to just monopolize the markets across the nation. Is this a natural gift that you have, or is this something that other CEOs could learn and leverage themselves?
So I find this. I find that a lot of people live in denial. Mm-hmm. There's a reason. I'm kind of like the Maytag repairman. Do you remember him? He's the loneliest guy in town because if you bought a Maytag, you never had it.
That's right.
There was never a warranty problem because it was always so perfect. Well, a lot of companies live in this denial. When do I get the problem, the call? Usually when the problems are so massive, it's a matter of sink or swim, fix this. And I have to sign NDAs so that nobody can know that I'm fixing this rat's nest.
Yeah.
And I'm not allowed to disclose what the problems were and all that other stuff. So you think, well, let's pay Sheldon $3 million to fix a problem. That's a lot of money. No, it's not. If you're losing $300 million each quarter, paying me $3 million to stop you from bleeding and actually turn profitable, I'm a bargain. But I don't get calls when things are good. Yeah. Nobody calls from developers. I can't even tell you how many developments I've bought and fixed and cleaned up or buy out their next three phases, all that stuff. Nobody ever called me in good marks. I always got calls when things were crappy, when their lines of credit were being recalled and they needed to figure out how they're going to survive and stay in business. But nobody likes to admit they're having problems. But the fact of the matter is, you said, what else do you do when you're not working? Well, I read financials. I don't know why, but I love reading financials and studying other people's messes. They say, well, when you're an investor and a founder, which I am, why do I need to take a bath when I can just get that free lesson watching other people take a bath?
Yeah.
So why do I need to make, they say, oh, when you make mistakes, well, you learn from them. Well, why do I need to make the mistake? If this company is making the mistake and I'm watching them make it, why do I need to mimic that just so I can learn a lesson? I'm learning a lesson by reading their financials. These guys are so enthralled by the amount of revenue they're making, but they're completely refused to look at the fact that they're losing money. They're not making a profit. So it's like those, they open up the business and they say, well, I'm buying this fidget or widget or trinket, whatever you want to call it, and I'm buying it for $10, but I'm selling it for $50. So I'm making $40. That's a great rate of return, except they ignore the column that, well, yes, but it costs you $100 to get this customer. So they're just looking at the one column going, look how much revenue. Yes, but you're losing every time you sell one of those widgets. You may feel like you're making $40 on it, but you're actually losing because it's costing $100 to acquisition that customer. So I see, you think, well, it's simplistic what you just said, Sheldon, but I see a lot of very large companies doing that same model. They think because they're charging a $275 deal fee to their agent and their philosophy is, yeah, but if we keep buying agencies and brokerages and recruiting more and more realtors, instead of losing 200, 300 deals operationally each time a realtor hands in a deal, it's going to change over. No, it's not.
Right.
It's not. It's really not. The fact, whether you have one, whether you have 10, whether you have 1,000 or 20,000, if you're losing every time a realtor hands in a deal, you're losing money. And each month that goes by when you have all these realtors paying $100 a month, well, guess what happens when you just add 25,000? It just multiplies.
Yeah.
And you just see these things and it's like a sinking ship and no one is smart enough to step up and say, and it's because they hate admitting they're making a mistake. And it's my philosophy is this. If you know something is 5 miles away from here, you walk 3 miles in the wrong direction. Do you keep walking in the same direction, even though you've now realized you're in the wrong direction? Or do you say, let's fix this?
Yeah.
Let's start walking back that way. But I had this conversation, actually, ironically enough, it was with that company that lost $1.25 billion, which I will not name. But what they do each seems like each year that goes by after they take a bath, they fire everybody in their C-suite. All their CEOs go, their VP goes, this guy goes, that guy goes, and they bring in a new batch of people. It's like a new batch of fall guys. Here you go. Here's our new guys. Here's your new CEO. Talk to this guy. And it's funny because they're a real estate company and they're publicly traded. And the guys they bring in, it's like, well, has he ever actually worked a day in real estate? Does he know anything about process? Does he know anything about?
No, he's a professional. He's a professional executive.
It's exactly that.
Yeah.
They find these guys and say, oh, well, he worked for this company. Yeah, well, there's a big difference between somebody who's ran brokerages before and someone who understands how to monetize this and fix this problem versus, well, let's get, we have a big plumbing leak. Our basement's flooded. Hey, I got a good idea. Let's call a roofer. Or if we put a fireplace in upstairs, that's going to fix the plumbing
problem.
Let's
buy a second house.
Yeah, but I could watch this and it's almost entertainment for me because I was talking to the guy. I said, well, I can hook in and the extra 50,000 transactions a year would fix this bleeding. And if we change the system to what and how you're acquisitioning things, you'll stop taking these beatdowns. No, we don't have a problem.
Yeah, yeah. They don't say. I call this the classic watermelon. It's the watermelon truck, right? Two brothers sell watermelons out of a truck. They lose money on every watermelon that they sell, and their solution is, we need a second truck of watermelons.
Yeah, we need more.
If we just sell more watermelons, we're gonna make it out of this hole. And that's of course not true. When every watermelon, the unit economics are not working, and we think we can fix it with volume, and we can't. So
yeah. But I see it every day. I see it all the time. And I just shake my head because it's funny because it seems to me the bigger the problems are, the more of a denial they live in. And all that goes through my mind is there's a lot of investors who needlessly take it on the chin. And I feel bad for a lot of these companies. I mean, those are the ones that are publicly traded. But even before it gets to that, I mean, you look at a lot of the venture capitals out there acquisitioning and funding some of these startups. And I just shake my head and go, you talk about that wall that's coming up. It's like this, you just invested in a clone of a clone of a clone. It's just copycat. But as I said, it's you're solving today's problem, but it's already been solved by 1,000 people. You need to do something unique and different that gets around, that is not afraid of that wall. We go right through that wall. We don't really care because we know that this customer is always going to be, if it's done properly, you're going to keep control of this customer and they'll follow your path. We built the whole, like I said, the whole ecosystem, the whole orchestration layer. You know, it's funny because I built it to kind of mimic something that's already tested and true.
What is that?
Take the Best Western. They're a really good example. Best Western doesn't always own hotels. A lot of times what they do is they feed independent hotels that happen to be under their brand.
Yeah.
So when you're going to a Best Western hotel, most of the time it's owned by a different company. But the Best Western's job, easiest way to explain it, is their job is to get the customer from Best Western and land a paying customer, a ready-to-transact customer, at the check-in desk of whatever independent hotel, whenever, wherever in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that is their job, is to monetize the customer and get them to the desk. And then the hotel clicks in and says, great, we'll take over from here. And that's essentially what we built. We said, we don't want to be in the brokerage business. We don't want to have to recruit and babysit and all that other stuff. We'd rather just deliver the customers. We want to deliver 50,000 customers to the brokerage, and they can handle the logistics of their agents and whatnot. But it was built specifically to fix the problem of what brokerages are facing today, where they're charging these needlessly low fees because realtors are making more money. They wouldn't have a problem paying a little bit more. But at the end of the day, they're using it as a recruiting tool to have silly low fees. But in most cases, when a brokerage is dealing with Intellitary, they're going to actually make more money from our transactions than they're going to make even from their realtors paying their deal fees.
Well, how does that work? Because on the one hand, it sounds like it's lead gen for brokerages. You're going to feed them work. But I don't think that's – I think what you've talked about in other places, is it's more than that, right? It's explain what that is, that you built that is beyond just you're not just the Best Western feeding – hotel customers to individual hotels, right? You're putting more structure in place. Explain what Absolutely. That is.
Okay. So let's talk about something like Realtor.com, Zillow, Trulia, all these companies. You talk about lead generators. Customer goes to the website, fills out a form. My name is Joe Smith. I'm hoping to buy a property. Here's my phone number. Here's my email. They take that. They sell it to realtors who buy leads, whether it's $60, $80. I'm sure they have their scoring matrix. They're done. They're not. That's the end of the rope. The difference being is our AI technology. So, for example, I'm not going to put a name to this, but in general, the rule of the industry is for every 100 people that go to the website, maybe 1-3% of customers will actually fill out that form, which then they monetize and sell for whatever, $50, $60, $70, let's say.
Yeah.
We're a little deeper. So first of all, when you go to IntelliTerry, you're going to meet Chloe AI. Chloe AI is as realistic of a conversation as you and I are having right here, right now. So difference being, Chloe AI was personally designed by myself. Chloe knows real estate. In fact, she knows more than me because every single state is different. Every single city, every municipality, et cetera, et cetera. She's going to actually interview you. So she's going to start asking you and say, hey, welcome to IntelliTerry. Are you looking to buy a home or are you looking to sell? And engaging you that way. She's going to start asking how soon. How soon is important because she's trying to find out, she's trying to score you to find out how motivated you are.
Okay.
She's screening you, and then she goes to a different point where she qualifies you. She's going to pop something up, say, hey, I just noticed you haven't registered. You're going to register, put in your info. And then she's going to call you, and she's going to vanish off your screen. She's going to take you from being online to offline, and she's going to say, hey, we were just chatting online, Jeff, and I just want to chat with you to ask you a few more questions. And she's going to ask you, you know, are you looking to, you know, back to the thing, well, you want to buy, have you sold your home yet? Or are you renting and have you been approved, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She's going to collect all the data, all that stuff. And then she's going to say, hey, I can connect you. This is the dispatch part. I can connect you to so-and-so who's in your city. He handles this specifically. You're actually getting a customer hot transferred on the phone. And that's one of the reasons she calls you versus she wants to get you offline so that she's on the phone with you so she can now patch you directly through to our partners. Now, the second part of it is, because there's lots of different layers of this, she's going to act, you know, people say in one sentence, explain IntelliTerry, take Zillow, Uber, and Match.com, throw it in a blender with some tequila. So she's going to find out who you are, what you want, when you want it, where you want it, et cetera, et cetera. Make sure you're not a tire kick. You're just kind of mucking around, wasting time. Because when you are buying leads, if you're a realtor buying leads from whoever, whatever company, there's a known statistics where 50% of the leads you're going to buy, you're never going to actually talk.
Yeah.
You phone them right after you get the lead. No one answers. You call back the next day. No one answers. And sometimes they're not even real phone numbers or real customers. Here, I'm actually putting a real customer on the phone with you. And that's essentially the long and short of it. It's a little bit more entrenched than that and a little bit deeper the learning. But the conversation you're going to have with Chloe is really going to feel a lot like this because we've implemented what we call AI AV, which is audio video. So your conversation is going to look just like you're going to see Chloe instead of me, and your conversations can be fully engaging. Any question you could possibly have that pertains to real estate in your locality, she knows. She has access as well to everything that if you were shopping for real estate, looking through MLS, and you said, yeah, I'm kind of looking for this and that, and I want this area, but I don't want that area. Her abilities are beyond comprehension. She'll be able to give you an evaluation on your home, of course, with proper disclosures and whatnot.
Right, right.
But she'll be able to guide you. But her real goal is to put you on the phone with one of our specialists. This was built for the preservation of the industry because I see two futures. One is the future that I'm building with IntelliTerry, and the other one is the evolution where people eventually say, wait, why do I have to even deal with a realtor on this? Why do I need to have a realtor to sell my house? So I can just do this and do that. Why do I need to have a realtor if I could just fill out this offer to purchase myself? That is what's going to happen as time goes on. We'd be kidding ourselves if we didn't. This is to make sure from my side, keep in mind I've spent a lifetime in this industry, that the brokerage stays a thing. It stays a thing and stays, keeps a an ability to monetize.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you mentioned early on about the importance of communication, that real estate is a communications industry. And so it's almost maybe the natural step for you to say, hey, we're gonna actually build a system that focuses on the communications handoff to, you know, between the customer and the realtor, because that's where the magic happens. That's where the connection happens. That's where the relationship is built.
Yeah. It's the difference between what they would buy from lead generator companies, who they sell data. Whoever filled out a form, here it is, goodbye, see you later. We don't care if you sink or swim. We don't care if you close the deal or don't.
Right.
We hope you do, because then you'll be back to buy more. But if I got paid $1 for every person who was buying leads, and I rarely talk to anybody who loves the leads that they buy. And then I say, okay, well, the next thing is they can advertise and get their own leads. And then they say, well, yeah, but when I do that, the problem is maybe 2 in every 100 actually become a paycheck,
right?
If that. And then that depends on the quality of the agent as well. But in this industry, there's this thing called the 90-10 rule.
Okay.
The 90-10 rule is this: 10% make 90% of the money, and the 90% make 10% of the money. And then you say, well, how many were there like Sheldon's up there? Well, that's 1%. If you're in the top 1%, yeah, you're making the millions of us. If you're in the 2%, yeah, you're making a good 6-digit income. But as soon as you drop under that 90%, it just plummets. And the one reason, and it really comes down to a simple reason why there's such a big gap between success and not success, and why there's such a big bulk gap. And it's all about customer acquisition. They either A, don't advertise, or buy leads, or do anything to build. So imagine any business, translate that to any business. Imagine you open a store or a restaurant, but you don't have food. You don't have a menu and you don't have food. Well, how do you expect to have people come back? And how do you expect people to do? And you won't invest in yourself. Why would you want your customers to work with you? You know, what makes you think that if you're not prepared to, you know, spend a couple bucks advertising each month to make yourself relevant, to actually attempt to get customers, why would you want anyone to, why would I want to list my house with someone who I know is not going to advertise?
Right.
Not going to put any effort into selling my home.
They don't have the distribution. Well, so I'm curious, as you've built this, what's worked, and what are some things you've run into that surprised you because they didn't work?
Well, because I know too much. I mean, after 3.5 decades, I know too much about the industry. There are some excellent, excellent, really professional, go-getter, high-end realtors out there, great agents, been around a long time. They know what they're doing. But as I said, it's a 90-10 rule. I built this because I thought, well, the guys who know what they're doing, I mean, back in the day, you'd wait 3 months just to get an appointment with me. I didn't need customers anymore. It was just the point where we have so many customers, only so many hours in a day. And there's this monetization that I think is available. I think if you say, what's the problem with the brokerages? They're not monetizing that 90%. Hmm. There's a lot of realtors that could be doing well, but they're struggling to get the customer. I want to be able to monetize that for the brokerages. It helps the agents that are suffering. It helps the brokerages monetize people who normally wouldn't. And if they're doing less than, and you get a whole bunch of these people that do 0 deals in a year, or they do 1 or 2 deals in a year, or 3, it was an average when you get to that 90%. And there's no reason, if they had a customer and they have the ability, it's not that they don't have the ability, they do, they just don't have the customer. And unlike the leads where they just get, here's a bunch of leads, good luck, have fun, the old Glengarry, Glen Ross days. Well, here's a customer. This customer has found this house and this house, and they're looking to possibly put an offer in on this. And they have a home over here, which they want to sell. It's not listed. Go in there. Your appointment's already made. Get in there. So as long as they don't fumble the ball, this is about serving up low-hanging fruit to people who need to be monetized and need to make a living for themselves. In turn, realtors going to make some great money. But the brokerage is getting new revenue that they didn't have before. So you think, say, what agency, what brokerage wouldn't want an extra bonus 50,000 transactions a year? I mean, you're talking that translates into hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Zero will say no. And if they do, well, then it's one of these companies that has employed a whole bunch of people who've never been around the block before, you know?
Yeah. Well, where is this? Where is the model just working everywhere then? Like everyone you talk to, everyone sees it, they demo it, and everyone just adopts it? Or is it?
Built to go national.
Uh-huh.
So one of the things you said, what works, what doesn't work. If you build this model and you build it where each and every single agent has to subscribe independently, it would be like herding cats.
Sure.
This is one that has to be done because of its size and its scale. As I said, I don't want to be another brokerage. We didn't build this so we could say, hey, let's be another brokerage. We don't want to compete with the brokerages. We want to facilitate the brokerages. So we want to have our direct relationship with the brokerages. Where are we now? We're in what I call evaluation stage. One thing I won't do is put together a transaction with a mega brokerage with 25 or 30,000 agents and have it that I regret doing that. Same thing on the other side. The other side, well, we're looking for a third-party investor because I've taken it quite far, but fairly sizable pockets in order to facilitate its growth to this point. But I'd be a disservice to my own company if I didn't get third-party venture capital cash.
I see.
But at the same time, do I just jump at the first guy who waves a check? I mean, do I think that lots of venture capital would like it? Yeah, well, I make no bones about it. I built this thing backwards as an investor. I have no doubt in my mind that the valuation shortly after, it's designed to scale fast. It's designed to valuate high. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind this thing's going to do exactly what it's going to do. So investors aren't a problem. The right investor is the thing that I look for. So if they don't understand prop tech and they don't understand the magnitude of what it is that we've built, they're probably not going to be a fun partner because it'd be like having a backseat driver that doesn't know anything about what you're doing, but yet has this crazy opinion. I know how to scale. I know how to get acquisition the customers. And I built this magnificent machine that generates revenue, cash flow. And unlike a lot of companies, I actually do look at the profit margin and the CAC and all those other details. Like I said, this was built backwards from the investor's point of view to facilitate an industry. And the industry happens to be a $1 trillion industry. I mean, let's face it. It goes above and beyond that wall that's coming our way. Why? Because guess what? In 5 years from now, someone will still need a roof over their head and control of this acquisition. I've controlled the customer for 35 years. I don't plan on not figuring out how to control a customer. So there's a lot of really compelling, interesting things going on here.
I love it. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to share this with us on the show here. If you were talking with other CEOs that are out there contemplating or actually building or operating in this space with, you know, prop tech, technology, SaaS, or something like that, what would the two of you talk about over lunch? What are the things that would come up? What are the tips that you'd hear or that you'd share with somebody like that?
I'm a market share guy. I always look and say, and maybe I'm insatiable when it comes to this, but I'm always looking and saying, how do I grow it to this? How do I hit my path, or how do I make it so I cross that finish line where if this is my target, get there? So back to $1 trillion industry, there's a reason I play in this industry. I'm building prop tech because it allows me to deal with my insatiable appetite. And you say, well, take Uber as a good example. Uber came along. They're a massive unicorn operation. They made billions of dollars. And guess what? Lyft came along. Uber's still in business. Taxi cabs, still on the road. The bottom line is, why is that? Well, because the transportation industry is a $1 trillion industry. And when you have such a big, giant market, I know this real estate, it's not going to just disappear. There's a lot of things that will probably disappear over the next so many years. Real estate's just not one of them.
Yeah.
The services and being able to solve a problem for a consumer and create that monetization path so you can take a customer from A to B and have them cross the finish line. That's where the revenue comes from. I mean, that part to me is the easy part, but it's the part yet so many of these companies miss.
Interesting. Well, Sheldon, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. I really appreciate it. And for our listeners, it's really insightful to be able to hear from somebody who's been through various stages over a long career, and is still, you know, has had success and is still building towards more success. So it's really valuable to have those insights shared with the audience. So I really appreciate you taking that time today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's been great. And for our audience who's listened to the show today, thanks again for joining us on the Breakout CEO podcast.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.